You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Jeffrey Smith, American Free Press's Eastern Bureau Chief. Jeff, thanks for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Jeff, you have an article in the newest edition of American Free Press on page 12, Hurricane Sandy's Untold Story, Looting, Violence, and Resistance. I read the article and I was pretty shocked because I didn't see any of this stuff on the mainstream media. Have they reported anything about this?
Well, they have reported it, but they've reported it in a muted way, and they've put it in with a jumble of other things. And of course, that they can mention it then, and it's just not going to get into the public consciousness properly. And of course, they don't want it registering with people. But what happened here with this storm reveals several things. First of all, it reveals the dangerous incompetence of this government. It reveals how close we are to a Greek state. What's happened in Greece almost happened here for a while. We did have people eating out of dumpsters. What also it does, it reveals something that the patriotic community has been saying for the last 40 or 50 years, that the infrastructure, and especially the food supply, is dangerously stretched and dangerously undermined in this country. First of all, New York City is the only waterway city that I know of this importance, that has virtually no hydraulic engineering against a storm. There's a reason why the storm can come across and do all this tremendous damage, billions of dollars worth of damage. Because for years and years and years, all kinds of urban planners and all kinds of engineers have warned New York City that there is no flood protection. And they've been basically sent away for the last 40 or 50 years. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, the Museum of Modern Art had a whole show dealing with hydraulic engineering, flood control engineering, and the fact it did not exist in New York City, asking why it did not. Well, why doesn't it? Because the legal responsibility and cultural responsibility of government is debt service. These states and these cities, and New York City is a great example, is eyeballs deep in debt. So the result is that the debt service to the banks is huge, and it's the first legal and it has become cultural responsibility of government. Not public safety, not fire, not police, not sanitation, not anything. No. The first thing is you've got to pay the banks first, and it's a ton of money every year. Number two, of course they want to let you see the budget, but they don't want you to see the whole kefir, the whole range of what government is financially doing. But the result of this is when sane people come to the government and say, look, the city is wide open for a mess, they're just sent away. In Europe and many places in the world, if they have a subway and it's near a floodplain, of course they have watertight doors. Now, if anybody out there wants to simply Google flood control devices, you'll see how many websites come up where there are devices that either come up out of the ground or can be quickly assembled, or there are flood-resistant doors, flood-proof doors that simply come up. You have to realize that millions of gallons of water flowed into the Holland Tunnel. Holland Tunnel was filled with water to the point where structural engineers were afraid of what could happen. The subway tunnels were full of water. The city basically shut down. The electricity was stopped on Manhattan Island from the Battery to 40th Street for 5 days. It's amazing the psychological effects on people of that. People got spaced out, then they got angry, then they became depressed, of course, because they were deprived of their electronic toys and their electronic thinking aids. And as a result, they had to be normal people. So the bottom line is that it was amazing to see the psychological effects and cultural effects just of depriving people of their cell phones. What also happens, of course, is, and almost immediately, that means within 10 minutes, you had gangs, some of which were organized over the internet prior to this, set out to loot everybody they could. And the only people they didn't loot were people that were guarding their houses with swords, pickaxes, shotguns, assault rifles. It's amazing. Now, there are numerous public officials that called for the National Guard to get on the scene right away. This was immediately resisted by Mayor Bloomberg, who said to the media that he doesn't want the National Guard on the streets because, well, there's looting on the streets, Mr. Mayor. No. I don't want the Guard on the streets. We have enough people with guns on the streets. So he did everything to impede the National Guard's involvement, even in areas where crime was out of control. You have to realize, in the area of Rockaway, the gangs, first of all, started shooting at houses. Then they started shooting at each other because one was going into another's territory. There are several good reports that they were shooting at police, and police held their position until reinforcements come up. Well, what does that mean? That means they could run free and do whatever they wanted, except when they were resisted by groups of homeowners who were armed. If this sounds like the Wild West, it was. Ask people in the Rockaway area. Ask people in Howard Beach. There were spray painting signs, "We're going to shoot looters," because looting and crime became such a serious, dangerous problem. The police were telling people on the Lower East Side, do not use your iPhones as flashlights, because so many of them were being snatched out of people's hands by people running away into the dark.
Were they able to identify the people that did these things?
I would say they were people that had low visibility at night.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the thing is that people that would be harder to identify at night.
Like blacks?
I don't know.
Who were the looters? Who do you think the looters were?
I think that the looters basically were people from gangs. I think that they were primarily lower middle class or below people, lower income people. I think these were people who were preying on lower income neighborhoods primarily. And yes, I think disproportionately they were non-whites, of course. They weren't running through Brooklyn Heights. They weren't running through the Upper East Side. I mean, these are not kids from the Upper East Side. These are not kids from 50th Street and Park Avenue. They're not from Brooklyn Heights. Some of the people had to guard their houses from the second story because the first story was flooded. Houses were partially collapsed.
Were there any deaths?
Oh, yes. There were many deaths in Brooklyn. Yes. There were almost 100 deaths now.
And what about deaths from looters?
That's hard to say. The state and city in New York is doing everything not to elaborate on the violence. They're basically playing dumb. It's hard to say. If somebody got into a fight and they splashed into the water and then somebody killed them and now they're floating in the water and they have trauma on their head, well, that's easy to attribute to stuff falling off a building or they fell out of a building and hit something. Very, very little of the deaths are being investigated as they should, as a possible crime. Well, sure, because they don't want to admit there was wild crime in the city.
You said before that the looters were organizing over the internet. Is that what you said?
Yes, of course. They were organized by Twitter, or they were organized over the internet. Yes. 2 days before the storm was coming, that was on the media. That supposedly the police were looking into that. Well, what did authorities do in this matter? They certainly didn't stop the violent looters. The people with guns stopped the looters. The people with pickaxes and with knives and with swords stopped the looters. Those are the people that were not bothered. This is an amazing scene. It's an amazing failure of government. You've got looters that are shooting at each other for territory. Unless many people are all lying to me, they were shooting at the cops. This all happened almost immediately after the floods. So what are you seeing here? You're seeing the surface of society here being torn away. And you're seeing what's actually right below the surface in New York City. And that's true of every urban area. Look, this is not a functional society. This is not the 1920s, 1930s. It's not the 1950s where you had a viable middle class. What do you have in New York City? First of all, you've got the ultra-wealthy, which, by the way, many of them have fled the city. That's another story. The thing is, they're in their compounds all over the world. They put their assets outside of the country. You've got people who are ultra-rich wannabes on the Upper East Side. You've got the immigrants themselves, often violent and often divided into gangs. And you've got the permanent underclass, and you've got the yuppies. This is not Miracle on 34th Street, New York anymore, okay? Why? Because you've driven out the white middle class. You've driven out the middle class. There is no viable middle class here. And see, the thing that held the city basically together was the upper middle class and lower upper class, who were highly educated. They may have been perverted. They were very left-wing, and they went to all kinds of bad things. They dedicated their lives to all kinds of bad things, from communism to Alice Bailey to the United Nations to Zionism to all the crazy things they went to. They were very destructive to the larger American society, but they did stabilize the city socially and functionally, and they provided a tax base. Well, that's gone. So that's why if you have a figure like Bloomberg attempting to pontificate and attempting to affect things in far-off states and attempting to become a national voice, what's going on here? First of all, he's in office illegally in a third term. And secondly, once he gets out, it's going to be a Nelson Rockefeller thing where he's going to have the money and he's going to basically determine who's going to effectively be able to run for mayor. So he's a permanent mayor. He's going to become a gray eminence in the background. But it's like Nelson Rockefeller, 95% of the bills for the Republican Party, and meanwhile giving money to every faction of the Democratic Party so they all fought with each other constantly. Well, you can have the same effect now. You've got a billionaire out there, and basically he can determine who can run for mayor forever. So this is a nightmare. And now the guy is doing things like sending investigators into gun shows in Utah and Arizona.
Right, I heard about that.
I mean, this guy is trying to spread his influence all over the country, amazingly. First of all, he's formed a police department inside the police department. All mayors do this to a certain extent, but he's done this to a very disturbing extent. You've got a new, young kind of police officer who is very TSA-ish. He's not the old friendly guy that was your friend. Police are no longer your friends. Now the new guys, they will all say, oh, the TSA is getting away with this. Well, I can do this too. Well, no, you can't because you're a sworn officer and they're not. But they don't pick up on that. I'm seeing all kinds of aggressive and improper behavior now. But that's among this new crowd that he's brought into the police department. So that's another very disturbing issue. The bottom line is that New York City has been warned for eons about the danger of major flooding. Now they want to cry they've got all problems. Why didn't they require building codes in areas that are known highly violent storm tracks across Brooklyn and across Rockaway in the very exposed areas? All of those buildings should be required to be at least foot-thick reinforced concrete. A lot of these buildings that were built out there, the people knew or should have known that, number one, you're exposed. Number two, you're in a storm track. Number three, you're building the house as cheaply as you can. So, of course, when the storm came across, it did maximum destruction. Well, why was it that building codes were not proper in that area? That's another question that's been around for decades, and no one will speak to it. Well, let's see if they speak to it now. Additionally, the storm itself was unusual. First of all, we were supposed to get all kinds of effects. We didn't. For the first 24 to 48 hours of the storm was raining a little bit, then it was blowing, then both the rain and the wind totally stopped, to the point where people were calling it fake a cane and laughing about it. At various times, it was like turning on and off a switch. Sometimes you got violent rain, then violent winds, and then 10 minutes later, nothing. There were periods when the whole thing went quiet. It wasn't like there's an eye of the storm passing over us. No. It was on, off in a strange pattern. Also, the action of the water, and I'll get killed for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway because I don't care. The thing is that it's the truth. The action of the water did not match the action of the wind or rain. Some of the water that hit, walls of water that hit exposed areas, did it at a time when there was wind, but nowhere near the wind that would seem to generate waves like that. What's going on there? What's happening here? This storm was the strangest thing you ever saw. At times, there's people that could see stars, and then it clouded up again.
So what are you suggesting?
Well, if you have a storm that is highly unusual, that's behaving in a pattern with at least members of the public, maybe they're not scientists, maybe they're not part of the Egyptian priesthood of meteorological people. And of course, they know things, and of course, nobody else is supposed to know anything. But the bottom line is that if you have a storm which is exhibiting very unusual characteristics, or starting and stopping, or if you've got water effects that seem to be independent of what's happening with the wind and what's happening with the rain, what does that mean? Don't you think that could be looked into, what actually occurred here? Was anybody looking at a spectrum analyzer at this point? Was anybody looking at a gravity meter? Was somebody looking at some of the energetic effects around here? Also, in the days before the storm, there were repeated reports of unusual chemtrail activity. A lot of people were talking about that right before the storm. What's that about? Is that anything? That's an avenue for investigation, certainly. After all, what the hell are they spraying up there? I mean, there have been congressional hearings about weather formation active chemicals being put into the air. Why isn't that a subject? I mean, we have billions of dollars worth of damage here. We've got people dead. We've got whole areas of the city wrecked beyond belief. Some of those areas are in Rockaway and in the exposed areas. 40 or 50 homes, at least, that burned down in Breezy Point. How did those fires start? Next thing. If you have this kind of destruction, don't you think that every avenue should be seriously investigated? They're not even scheduling any investigations as to what government did, what government didn't do. The charitable organizations were on the scene after the storm abated. They were on the scenes of destruction within 12 hours. Aid was coming to people. Most of these government agencies took 2-3 days to get there, and then it was very inadequate aid. The cry of, where's Bloomberg, went up all over the worst, most devastated areas. Where's Bloomberg? Where's FEMA? Yeah, where were they? It was like pulling teeth to get these federal agencies to help anybody. What's going on out in Long Island now? The power is still out on Long Island. And all the fancy political footwork is going on now. Who's to blame? What's going on? Look, this also says something to everybody who's listening to this. If you think your lifestyle or your home is secure now, forget it. That America is over. This storm shows you that America is over. So you have to secure your home. You've got to secure your family. You've got to secure your power, folks. I mean, what are you doing here? Do you have a generator? Do you have independent power? Why don't you? Well, if you ever needed motivation as to why that's necessary, you've just had it. God has just sent you a 10-foot sign about what government's worth, how honest government is. He's also sent you a 10-foot sign about how undermined the infrastructure is and how undermined the food supply is. You had to see what's happening, of course, because the power's off. What does that mean? That means that all the supermarkets and all the delis and everything had to dump their stuff into dumpsters. What happened then? People were climbing into dumpsters by the hundreds, removing food in New York City, in Manhattan. This isn't happening in some third world country. This happened in Manhattan, folks. What would happen in your town if the power went off? Somebody does something to the power supply and the power goes off. What would happen? What happens if somebody engineers a storm? This storm certainly had a major political effect. Nobody's arguing that. This storm happens at just the right time politically. What does that say to you? Does it say to you that maybe there could be engineering here that could cause this? I don't know. One thing's for sure. The quality of the open scientific literature that you can find on the internet that shows how advanced weather control science has become. That's openly available now. This is not a conspiracy theory. These are major universities, major testing facilities, national science labs, major researchers, well-funded studies. All have demonstrated how the weather can be modified, how you can make storms, how you can abate storms. This is in the open literature. So if that power is in the hand of government or in the hand of private corporations or private organizations, don't you think you can make yourself more secure? Make no mistake. This storm was terrible. It deprived people of their homes, their livelihoods, their life savings, and many of them their lives. But it also did something else. It's sending you a warning, a storm warning, that if you're not protected, if you're not doing everything possible to ensure your family safety and your community safety, well, then, number one, you're being very foolish. And second of all, you're not being good American. Why? Because if you're derelict in protecting your community and derelict in protecting your family, well, then you're derelict in protecting your country, because our country depends on communities and depends on stable families. That's exactly what's been attacked over the last 50 to 60 years, right? The thing is that now somebody may have a weather weapon. This storm may have been purely naturally caused, or maybe not. But whatever it is, it shows the necessity of people protecting themselves. It's up to you. You have to do it as an individual. Government isn't going to help you. You just have an example of what government is all about. People are practically naked in the street. They're soaking wet. It's getting cold. Another storm is coming. The houses are wrecked. And government is taking a sweet time helping. I'll tell you how arrogant this government is. They wanted to still, after all this destruction, they wanted to run the New York City Marathon. First of all, they stopped the Halloween parade. Then they still wanted to run the marathon. And all kinds of people said, don't you think that's kind of inappropriate? Whereupon, the marathon committee put their hands on their hips because they're a noxious mixture of the yuppie culture and the Anglo-Elite culture, or the minor members of the Anglo-Elite, the wannabes. And what happens was that they said, people have come from a long way to run this, that cone back at the public. Whereupon, various people in Staten Island told the committee, mostly in anonymous calls, but also rumors started circulating on Staten Island that if the runners started running from there, they would be bricked. In other words, people would take up large numbers of stoned objects, and maybe the 20 leading runners in the world would be grievously injured, which is basically the end of their career and, of course, the end of the event. Well, that went down. Then the police and media got a series of anonymous calls from people in Queens saying, if they try to run through here, we're going to pop some shots at them. Now, Bloomberg started blowing off any criticism of the race until there were serious threats of violence. Then, in about an hour or two, the whole position on the marathon went 180 degrees around the other way. And he said, oh, well, you know, we have police problems here, and we can't let the race run. Also, the New York Post went to Central Park, and they found huge generators in the Central Park administration area. This is while people are freezing, and they're in the dark and everything. They had these huge generators that they had brought to power up the central office and central command of the marathon, the operation. Observation Center. And then parts of the runners decided to go out to Staten Island in their running outfits and serve meals. And, you know, there were people that realized how deep their hand was in the cookie jar, public relations-wise, because there were very serious threats of violence. So to dismiss that and to reduce that, what do? They send small groups of them out to Staten Island and other affected areas to serve food and to help in their running outfits. See, we're not really arrogant bad guys, but why did you have the tone you did before you were threatened with serious violence? That's another little area that is being soft-pedaled, what really stopped the marathon. But the thing is that the whole atmosphere here, and this is one more nail in the coffin of the city, because if you're a businessman and you just got financing, are you going to put your money into business based in New York City, or are you going to maintain your operations here, that any expansion is going to be in some area that's least affected by the Depression? Because that's what we're having right now. The thing is, of course, you're going to send the money out of the city. So this is exactly what happened with 9/11, where everybody got loans, but they didn't use it for their New York businesses. They put the money outside the city and expanded outside the city. I mean, this behavior is just a death knell, and it's very sad. You know, the city always had an evil element. I mean, after all, you're in a city now that was a financier of communism. It was basically the financial, one of the mothers of communism, because of the banks here and the banks in London. 130 million people are dead. So this was always an evil place, make no mistake. But it had many good people in it. It had many good cultural things in it. That seems to be all gone now. That's all abated. And as I say, you've got basically four groups here. You've got the ultra-wealthy, you've got the wannabes, you've got the yuppies, and you've got the permanent underclass, and you've got the immigrants. And if that's a long-term workable society, well, it had a chance to show that. And what it showed was this is society ruled by incompetence and corruption and unreasonableness. They're unreasonable about anything. They have an attitude that they don't want to be reasonable about anything. Because why? Because in New York, we don't have to be. And their absolute attitude is that they are the banking center, they are the Federal Reserve Center, because they know, like I know, and every serious observer knows, that the country right now is being run by the six major banks and the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations that basically make policy, because policy is being made extra-governmentally in this country. You've got a bunch of NGOs on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and in London, by the way, that basically are formulating policy. It goes down these federal agencies, is rubber stamped, and becomes American foreign policy, or it becomes the Commerce Department or the Interior, whatever. Basically, these are think tanks in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and their buddies in academia that are basically setting policy entirely after governmentally. New York knows that. They know that basically the banks and the NGOs, and to a lesser extent certain law firms, are basically running the country. So of course they're arrogant. And of course their attitude is reality is what we say it is. And you've seen that in the storm. And we've had tremendous destruction. We've had all kinds of horror. And the same guys are in power. And there's virtually no effective criticism of who's running things and how things are run. Or if there's criticism, it's always buried in such a high background noise of other things that it all becomes a murmur. And it doesn't get into people's consciousness. And most certainly does not trigger any effective, intelligent action.
Well, besides American Free Press, is anybody else writing about it?
No, not really.
Not one outlet is writing about the looting?
There is writing about the looting in the local press here. But again, it's submerged in a large number of other effects, so it all becomes a cacophony. Are they saying it? Yes. Is it something that's going to get into the public consciousness? No, because the public now has been so overwhelmed with the flood stories that their brains are just turning off. So now you could show everything, and it's not going to trigger any effective action in the public. They know that. They know exactly how to coach this in ways to cause a psychological turnoff, where nobody takes any action, nobody asks any serious questions. But how did this storm form? Exactly, was there unusual HAARP activity? Was there unusual chemtrail activity or any activity that looks like the storm was engineered? That's number one. Number two, once there was a five-day notice the storm is coming, you know, there's a new invention in the world. You know what it is? It's called a sandbag. And by the way, Goldman Sachs has a headquarters at 200 Water Street, right on the water. During the height of the flood, they were unaffected. Why? Because they had their own generators and upper floors. The building was engineered to do that. And secondly, they put, I don't know, some people are saying thousands of sandbags around the building. The whole downtown was horribly flooded, except Goldman Sachs. That was dry as a bone, and it was illuminated. The whole city is blacked out down there, except for Goldman Sachs. Now, why is that? Why is Mr. Goldfein's power?
You mean Blankfein?
blank finding. Now, the thing is, Occupy Wall Street went up to his apartment building, and they were picketing him. Well, he was at a gala event, and that's another thing. There were a whole series of gala events that were held above the blackout line of 40th Street. It was a whole different world. And up there, there was a kind of, well, you know, we have no flooding here, so we might as well go forward. There were all kinds of gala events that were being held in Midtown hotels while people were shivering in the dark in the outlying areas of the city. Believe me, there was an absolute let-me-take attitude among many of these idiots on the Upper East Side in Midtown Manhattan. I've got my power. I've got my food. Well, guess what? The food ran short there as the days went on because the trucks weren't coming in. It just showed the worst of society, how close the worst of society really is to the surface. And there's a reason for that.
The barbarians at the gate.
Well, why is that? Because there is no more morality, there is no more ethics, there is no more spirituality. The tone of the city, at one time, at least you had a very decent surface on the city. Of course, what was below the surface was a bunch of banks financing the Russian Revolution and organized crime and Arnold Rothstein starting the drug scene in America. On the surface, you had a decent white middle class majority, tremendous majority, and that gave it a stability and a tone to the city. No more. And what are you going to do about this, folks? Listen to me. The people who orchestrated the destruction of the city are now saying that they want to basically formulate policy for your town, your city, your region, maybe a federal region pretty soon. Gonna let that happen? If there's ever an example of what these people are about and what these people cause, it's New York City. And this storm just brought all what they've caused to the surface. It's just surfaced it for you to see. And that way, it is a hand of God showing you what these people really cause. You want them causing the same thing in your town, your city? I mean, what are you doing to prevent it? Number one, at this point, you do need to make your home and your family physically independent so that they are protected, they're well fed, and they have the accoutrements of modern life in such a way that they're stabilized. Right now, because you've just had an example of what goes on. But the second thing you have to do is you have to make your living space, your immediate area, politically and culturally secure. And the way you do that right now is to build a wall around your community and not to let certain things in. They are very seriously considering this whole agenda going one thing. You don't know what that is? Google it, folks. All these changes that are coming out of the international community, all these international NGOs that are here in New York, they want to change your life with that. From turning off all the coal plants, to driving the electric bills crazy, to taking away any semi-automatic weapons. They've got all kinds of crazy plans. The question is, are you going to let that in your state, and are you going to let that in your city? And it's very simple. You need to sit down with your elected officials and read them the Riot Act. It's this way. If you cooperate with this, we're coming after you a split second after you do it. Because the kind of guys you usually have in your local areas are a bunch of law school graduates who feel they're part of the Egyptian priesthood and they're exempt from any serious public review. Well, if the storm in New York didn't tell you why you have to not let that happen, you'll never get a better example. It all goes back to this. Yes, we had a terrible storm. But it also is a warning to the entire country. If this can happen in New York, it can happen anywhere. That's number one, because we have the most money and the most resources, and it still devastated the city. The second thing is that you can't let the people, or the kind of people that would allow something like this to happen, 5 days warning, and there's no sandbags, 5 days warning, there are no flood barriers, there's no engineering in the waterways at all. Why is that? London has its gates. One of the largest human projects in the world is the Delta Project. And the Netherlands, because they've had floods and they've tamed it. With all the money they got here, why aren't they doing that? They're not doing it because they want to keep the money recycling in the banks, and more and more and more, they want to bring America under their engineered control. That's what they're using their money for, not for public safety, to make a crazy elite more and more rich, more and more powerful, and to reduce you to serfs, which is what they really think. Now, I have sat in Council on Foreign Relations meetings. I have sat in NGO meetings since I was a teenager. And I'm amazed at what statements billionaires make to each other about the common people or about their plans, how open they are about their plans. These are all things to consider when you see the storm. The violence in New York shows you something. What happens here shows you something. Take it to heart and take action on it. You don't have much time, believe me.
Jeff Smith, American Free Press's Eastern Bureau Chief. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners. And looking forward to another update about a good old Gotham. See how it's faring in the weeks ahead. Thanks, Jeff.
Anybody wants to reach me, I'm open to talk to anybody. Thank you.
How can they reach you, Jeff?
Well, they can reach me basically by emailing me. It's Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, J, Smith, S-M-I-T-H. The J in Jeffrey is capitalized. The middle J is capitalized. The S is capitalized. Smith, dot New York. And the N in New York and the Y in New York is capitalized. At USA.com. So it's JeffreyJSmith.NewYork@USA.com.
Okay. Thanks again.
Okay.